Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington, D.C., that the government does not want you to know and that the mainstream media has been slow to report. As you know, you longtime listeners, and I want to thank my longtime listeners who hear me every day, and also new listeners who are just coming along and checking out the Inside Scoop. As you know, we give you the facts that the mainstream media is being slow to report, and we let you know what's really going on here in Washington. But to truly understand the Inside Scoop on what's going on in Washington, on why people think the way they do, I think it's important to understand the other side. It's important to understand how red America thinks. And so that is the topic of this week. All week we've been talking about the philosophy of red and blue America. What is red America? Well, if you watched the election returns on 2000, the Republicans were the red states, and Al Gore had the blue states. And we've been divided more and more, I would argue, into red and blue America. George Bush, who was elected, he said, as a uniter, not a divider, has managed to divide America more, I would say, than any other president since the 1960s. And if you go to my website, RadioInsideScoop.com, you'll see a poem that I've written, Reflections on Red and Blue America, where I've tried to see and to argue and to at least, you know, state what some of the differences between the way conservatives think and the way liberals think. And you may agree with me, you may not agree with me, but I do hope you will agree it's important to understand how the other side thinks. And most of my listeners are liberals or progressives or Democrats or open-minded moderates. I do have some regular conservative listeners, and I very much welcome their contribution to the show. But I think it's very important to hear the other side, to know what the other side is thinking. And that's why I've invited today as my guest a young Republican from the state of Utah. Her name is Allison Eichele. She's appeared on my show once before, to really give her views on how she understands America and how she understands the views of liberals and conservatives. The title of the show today is Hard Choices. What will Americans sacrifice for their country, and what should we sacrifice? And I argue in my poem that, that Republicans don't believe in hard choices, that we liberals understand that you can't have everything. But to read from my poem, which I will do, it says, conservatives believe in easy choices, guns and butter, buy now, pay later, war and prosperity. You don't like Saddam, remove him. America, like God, is all-powerful. Liberal democracy will spring up without irony, like fallow soil just waiting to be plowed. They will greet us with flowers and candy. Liberals believe in tough choices. Sacrifice tax cuts to preserve Social Security. If you go to war in Iraq, you will divert troops from capturing bin Laden. You will allow nuclear weapons in North Korea and Iran. If God cannot do it all, then America cannot do it all, even with a draft. Why does America, why does the world hate us so? And that's really what I want to talk about with Allison today. I want to find out whether she believes that conservatives also believe in hard choices. Do we have to decide between guns and butters, or can we really have it all? Can we have Social Security and tax cuts? Can we go to war in Iraq and at the same time not have to worry about North Korea and Iran? I think that conservatives, I'm willing to say, are more optimistic than liberals. They always look on the bright side. I guess I would say they only look on the bright side. But I'm going to give Allison a chance to respond, to tell me her views, and I'm going to give you folks a chance as well. The number, the toll-free number, if you want to dial in, is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. I want to invite now Allison. Allison, thank you very much for agreeing to be on my show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Well, you heard my poem. You heard my claim. Do you agree with me that that liberals are more likely to look at the hard choices America has to face than conservatives?
No, not necessarily. I think that I think right there is a divisive statement. I think that America as a whole needs to look at choices as a whole and not decide, oh, liberals think they're hard, but Republicans think they're easy. I think you need to look at the decisions as a whole. Now, I think that it's very interesting that you say that conservatives like to take the easy route, especially when, this didn't play much into your poem, obviously, but with the issue of abortion, I find it very interesting that liberals just say, oh, well, if I don't want a kid, I'll just abort it. conservatives look at that differently. I mean, there are hard decisions that you have to make in those situations, and that's just one example that I think
of many. I understand your point. I guess I would argue that the difference is that when it comes to individual decisions, things that individual chooses, like what a woman does with her body, what God you want to pray to, who you want to have as your partner, then liberals believe that individuals should be free to make their own decisions. But when it comes to national choices, things like tax cuts and Social Security and whether to go to war in Iraq or not, then they believe that when you're looking at everyone's interest, not just an individual's interest, that sometimes you have to weigh one off the other and you can't please everyone. Do you disagree?
In a way, yes. I don't think that we as Americans are out to please the entire rest of the world and just let everybody tell us what we need to do so we please the rest of the world. Now, I do think that the war in Iraq obviously is a tough decision. You're sending servicemen over to war. I don't think it was necessarily that tough of a decision, though. I think going to war in entirety is a tough decision. But when we had the UN passing so many resolutions, I mean, there comes a point when you can't just try and be pleasing to everybody.
Okay,
you've got to make the tough decision to take care of the situation.
Let's talk about the war in Iraq, and let's talk about what I consider to be a tough choice. I agree that Saddam Hussein was a bad guy. He certainly tortured people in his prisons. He had things like rape rooms. We now find out that Americans, unfortunately, are doing some of the same things in the same prisons. But in deciding to go to war in Iraq, I would argue that was not only a tough choice, but the wrong choice, because as much of a threat as Saddam Hussein was, he was a much lesser threat than many other nations on Earth. North Korea, Kim Jong-il, that can have nuclear weapons, that can hit the state of California. Iran is far more dangerous. Saudi Arabia, 15 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis, and they're the ones that are really fomenting revolution abroad. In Sudan, they're committing genocide. Arabs are killing blacks in Sudan. We're doing absolutely nothing about it. Wouldn't you agree that, at the very least, whether you agree with the war in Iraq or not, that making the war in Iraq, deciding to go, was a choice? And to do that war, you had to take troops from other possible good choices, like fighting in Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden or all these other countries I've mentioned. I mean, isn't that a choice, or can you really fight all these battles at once?
I don't think that it's necessarily that we have to fight all the battles in the world all at once. I do think that the war in Afghanistan, the war on terrorism, is an ongoing war. Now, I think that that includes Iraq. You cannot have a state that is in chaos and in a dictatorship and have a country that's not going to be a haven for terrorism.
Well, what about the other 30 to 40 countries on Earth that are run by dictators? I mean, shouldn't we invade them too?
I mean, I'm not necessarily saying that everybody has to have the democracy just like the United States.
Well, then why did we go to war in Iraq?
We need to go invade them.
You know, first they said it was weapons of mass destruction, and then we found out that that wasn't true. And then they said it was, you know, well, to stop, torture and rape in Saddam's prisons, and now we find that at least some of that continues under our people.
Now, okay, I want to talk to you about that.
Okay, go ahead.
A moment ago, you mentioned the choice of an individual. Now, if you have a company and you have somebody in your company that makes a wrong choice, now, is that company policy? No, and that's not American military policy.
Ah, but what have we found out, Allison?
If you decide to make an individual choice, then that's what happens.
Yeah, but we know that two generals wrote reports on this talking about exactly what was going on in Iraq, and not only did Donald Rumsfeld, the defense secretary, not read them, these reports have been out since March, but the Joint Chief of Staff, General Myers, also didn't read the reports. So don't you think that when someone at the top of a company refuses to read the reports of what's going on down below, that they're at least partially responsible?
I think that I don't know all the details of what's been going on with that whole situation. I do not think that the choice of few individuals should be a direct reflection on Americans. Unfortunately, the rest of the world is perceiving that, and I think that is an issue that not just Republicans are going to have to face. I think that Americans as a whole are going to have to face.
It hurts us all.
I think that's an unfortunate situation.
I'll agree with you that it hurts us all. Let me give out the numbers again. It's 877-57-SCOOP. You want to call in, challenge me, challenge Allison. That's your right. It's a free country. 877-57-SCOOP. It's a toll-free number. Or you can email me by sending an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. Some of you prefer numbers, not letters. For you, the number is 877-577-2667. Allison, I want to go back, though, to the point that I'm trying to make about hard choices. It seems to me, well, let me see if I can get some agreement from you on a few things, and if not, tell me no. Do you agree that we can't be everywhere in the world at once? I assume you agree to that.
Well, people, obviously.
Okay. All right. Well, no, that's good. I think that's pretty self. I mean, I think we can all agree to that.
Right.
And that, therefore, where we decide to send our troops, whether it be Iraq or Afghanistan or Syria or Saudi Arabia, Sudan, North Korea, wherever we send our troops, since we can't be everywhere at once, requires making tough choices, requires deciding which are priorities to American security and which aren't. I mean, you agree with that, right?
I agree, and to the extent that I think that Iraq became a priority because all diplomacy had been exhausted at that point.
Now, why is Iraq a priority where, and I'll just throw out three examples. Saudi Arabia, 15 of the 19 hijackers are from Saudi Arabia. They've been funding the madrasa schools to teach radical Islam. They've been funding a lot of the teachings that lead to Osama bin Laden. That's one example. Sudan, where you have basically blacks, black Christians, in fact, being murdered by Arab Muslims in what seems to be an ongoing genocide. Or North Korea, which is developing nuclear weapons. Iran is too. Only North Korea can hit California. Why aren't those four countries more of a priority than Iraq?
Well, I think at that point in time, I think the whole world was looking at Iraq. I mean, if we're gonna look at the UN as a governing body for the whole world was looking at the issue of Iraq. And you won't find anybody that goes back in history. I mean, all our senators decided to vote. Even the Democrats decided to go to war with Iraq.
Yeah, but Allison,
then,
when you say...
I guess everybody thought that it was a pretty good idea. So we can't just come back and say, oh, it was all just Bush. It was his only idea. He's the one that did all the voting. It was his fault. The whole world, UN acknowledged it. Everybody had acknowledged that this was an issue that needed to be dealt with at that time.
Well, Allison, I guess, first of all, I think it's a little inconsistent. When it first, 5 minutes ago, you say we shouldn't care what the rest of the world thinks. And then 5 minutes later, you're saying, oh, well, the whole world wanted us involved, but I'd go
I'm not saying that we need to please the entire world 100% of the time. I'm saying that we need to go through the measures of diplomacy,
okay.
And when those measures are all exhausted and we still feel that this is an issue, it needs to be taken care of.
Okay,
and,
right, and you know what? You know what?
Vote to the war in Iraq, even if we want to go to John Kerry. He voted for it, so...
Right, and I'm going to get to that...
See how we can just pin this on a Republican issue.
I'm going to get that to John Kerry's vote and the Democrats in a minute. It's a good point. I'm going to get to it in a minute. Let me just finish on the world. I agree with you, Allison, that we should exhaust diplomacy before going to war. Absolutely. We went, and George Bush did not want to go to the UN. Colin Powell insisted that he do so, and begrudgingly he did. He went to the UN, and the UN said, you know what? Give the inspectors more time. France asked for only 30 days. Saddam Hussein said he would let the inspectors go wherever they wanted, and he even agreed to have elections in Iraq if we would back off on the war. And instead, even though we went to the United Nations a second time and said we want a resolution to go to war, the world said no. Canada said no. And when Canada says no, you'd think we'd wonder. So the whole world didn't want us to go to war in Iraq, and we went anyway. So how is that at all a reflection of what the world wanted us to do?
The whole world, I think that's quite a twist of the situation.
Do you?
The whole world knew that Saddam Hussein was an issue, and they knew that it was a threat.
What's his issue? What's his threat? How is he worse than Kim Jong-il?
It's a threat to security.
Whose security? Our security? American
security? Your security?
Really? Tell me how Saddam Hussein was going to hurt you or me. I mean, I know how Osama bin Laden was going to do it, and he did it. That's very clear to me. How is Saddam Hussein going to hurt...
I find that interesting. If Saddam Hussein is willing to murder millions of his own people, why would
thousands.
He stop there?
Well, he did murder thousands of his own people at a time when we supported him, right? I mean, that's when our government was giving him chemical weapons along with France and Russia, and that was under Republican presidents, Reagan and Bush. But since 93, we haven't seen that kind of action by Saddam Hussein. He was a threat. Listen, Gaddafi was a threat in Libya, and Gaddafi killed Americans. But he also hadn't done anything since the late 80s. How is Gaddafi any different from Saddam Hussein? I mean, he still is a brutal dictator in Libya. He just doesn't attack Americans.
So are you suggesting that Saddam Hussein has not been a threat since 1993 to anybody's security?
I think it's safe to say that since 1993, Saddam Hussein has not been a threat to American security. Now, he's given aid to terrorist groups that have attacked Israel, and that's a horrible thing, as have, by the way, Saudi Arabia and Egypt and Syria and at least a dozen Arab countries. And all of them, I condemn people who give money to terrorists. And I think, frankly, if we had been willing to call off the war, that Saddam Hussein would have called off his money to terrorists. But I can't think of an American that Saddam Hussein... Since 1993, when Saddam Hussein tried to kill, and he did, tried to kill former President George Bush, and Clinton responded with a massive attack on his intelligence centers, I think Saddam Hussein's been pretty contained, don't you?
You know, to be honest, I really disagree with you on that point. I think that with somebody like Saddam Hussein, it's like sending your 16-year-old daughter out with a convicted felon. I just think that that is a time bomb, and I just don't think that that's necessarily a fair way to look at Saddam. Well, he hasn't done anything since 1993.
Okay, so, but you know what? Okay. But you're not addressing my questions about hard choices. I mean, I agree with you that Saddam Hussein was some level of threat. I'm not saying he was, all babies and puppies and happiness. I'm not saying that. He's a bad guy, all right? Granted, I concede that. But aren't there worse folks in the world? Aren't there worse countries? I mean, don't we have to make hard choices, and wouldn't it be better to be strong? I mean, while this was happening, North Korea developed nuclear weapons. While we were going to war in Iraq, Iran is developing nuclear weapons. Saudi Arabia is teaching people to hate us. Don't you think these countries should be a higher priority? And not to mention Sudan, where it looks like genocide may be occurring. Aren't these higher priorities?
Well, wasn't genocide also occurring in Iraq?
I don't think, no, I wouldn't say that genocide was occurring in Iraq. I think that Saddam Hussein, like most dictators, was trying to consolidate power, and he massacred...
No. This religious freedom that we as Americans enjoy, and everybody in the world should enjoy, Saddam Hussein wanted to deny his own people.
Oh, well, that's true. They didn't have religious freedom. They don't have religious freedom in Saudi Arabia. They don't have religious freedom in Iran. And in fact, it looks to me like when Iraq regains sovereignty, they're still not going to have religious freedom, because if they have a democracy, they're probably going to deny religious freedom to their own people. So lots of countries on earth don't have religious freedom, and I'm against that. But I still don't know that that is grounds for us to invade and topple the government, particularly when we have higher priorities.
I'm not sure exactly what diplomacy has been employed upon all other nations that you've mentioned. I do know that diplomacy was exhausted in Iraq, and thus the hard choice was made. And I would defend that choice. I would never change my mind about making that choice.
Okay, let me respond to your question about Democrats, and then I've got a whole phone bank that's lit up that wants to talk to you or me. But let's talk first of all. You said the Democrats voted for the war in Iraq. At the time, George Bush was claiming that there were weapons of mass destruction. Dick Cheney was talking about the fact that a nuclear weapon could be a bomb that could go to the United States. Condoleezza Rice talked about mushroom clouds in the United States. Dick Cheney said it's a fact. It's that they have reconstituted nuclear weapons. And we now know, from Bob Woodward's book, which, by the way, has never been repudiated by the Republicans at all, that when George Tenet, CIA director, went to George Bush, presented all the weapons of mass destruction evidence, which was apparently a few grainy photos, George Bush said, "Is that all you got?" So he knew that there were doubts about WMD, and yet he told the whole country that they had weapons of mass destruction. And I got to tell you, I'm someone who's very skeptical, very critical of the Bush administration. Even I believed him. So I don't blame John Kerry and other Democrats for believing him, but it turns out he lied to us, didn't he?
I personally believed him as well, and I still think that Saddam Hussein was very capable of these weapons of mass destruction programs. Now, what I do
well,
think
capable,
is
you know,
John Kerry, if he is worthy to be such a great president of our country, has a mind of his own, and if he's at all skeptical of what the president is saying, he could have researched that on his own.
Well, not really, because they're not providing information to Congress. We've learned, for example, with this torture of Iraqi prisoners, they did not tell even the Republicans in Congress about these reports. This is a very secretive administration. I find it hard to blame John Kerry for not having the secrets that Bush had.
Well, I found it interesting. Why did the rest of the world think that this was a problem? Why were there so many resolutions?
Apparently they didn't. Apparently they, whether it's Hans Blix, the inspectors, whether it's the United Nations, most of the world was saying, whoa, America, wait, let's prove it. Let's find the smoking gun. France said, just give us 30 more days. I don't think the rest of America believed it, and I think we now know that in fact, there's one Iraqi scientist, a guy by the name of Saadi, who is in jail for telling the truth. He told the Bush administration that Clinton destroyed the last of the weapons of mass destruction programs in 1998. He's being held in solitary confinement in a jail in Baghdad. He has no idea that the whole world now knows that he's right, because we're trying to press him to tell us where the weapons of mass destruction are, and he's saying, you know what, there aren't any. Let me go to some of our callers, though, because they've been waiting a while. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Allison Eichley from the College the College Republican National Committee. What's your first name and where are you from?
This is Gordon from Michigan.
Hi, Gordon from Michigan. How are you?
Alrighty. I wonder if Allison could explain the Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld's response to the Iraqi prisoner abuse, I thought it was quite an Orwellian statement in nature that the pigs of Animal Farm couldn't have said it any better in not dealing with specifics or apologies when he said, and I quote, "Our country is our country, and it's a wonderful country," unquote.
This is Rumsfeld.
Yes, and I want to know, what does that mean, and how does that address that problem?
Address the problem of the torture of Iraqi prisoners?
Right.
Okay, Allison, I'm...
Trying to explain it.
Trying to explain Rumsfeld's statement. I don't know. Allison, can you explain Rumsfeld's statement?
Actually, I would love to hear what he said, but we got cut off, and I just was able to get back on the line, I didn't hear what your caller had to say.
Gordon,
why
don't you repeat it, please?
Yeah, Rumsfeld said in response to questions about Iraqi prisoner abuse, quote, "Our country is our country, and it's a wonderful country," unquote. What does that mean, and how does that address the problem?
Got me, Allison.
To be honest, I didn't hear the entire speech. I've been driving across the United States for 3 days.
That was it.
Yeah, I don't know how that can explain anything, Gordon.
Let me finish.
Go ahead, Allison.
I think that coming from a journalistic perspective, I think that statements can be taken out of context, and I have no way to know what that statement meant in the context of the sentences surrounding it.
Well, the puzzling thing is
Oh, hold on, Gordon. Let Allison finish. Go ahead, Allison.
For him to say our country is what our country is, and it's a great country, I mean, he could have been referring to a myriad of other things. I don't know into what context he was speaking.
Okay, go ahead, Gordon.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. I mean, is Rumsfeld a victim of an insidious LSD experiment or what? It was completely incongruous to statements which are very pertinent, which forced our president to go on Arabian TV in order to explain himself, and Rumsfeld was completely not backing up his president. I mean, we need leaders who are leaders, not people who are continuously trying to protect their jobs after it's been exposed that they're doing their jobs half-assedly.
I don't think that the president was forced to go on Arab TV. I think the
damage control.
Hold on, Gordon. Let Allison respond.
I think the president is addressing an issue with sincerity. I think that there is an issue. I agree. I mean, I think that what happened in the Iraqi prisons was wrong. It was an individual choice. It's not like the president pushed a red button and said, go torture these Iraqi prisoners. I think that it's an individual choice, and the president, I understand why this has to be always politically twisted into the way that the president is saying, look, some individuals made some wrong choices, and we're sorry for this. We want to make it up. This is not what America is. I don't understand why that all of a sudden has to become, he's just trying to get reelected.
Gordon, I want to thank you very much for your call and your points. I really appreciate
it. I've got a Republican here who wants to make a response.
You have a Republican with you there?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, put him on. Or her?
Okay, here he is.
I am Osama!
Oh!
And
Osama has called once
to
before.
Publicly say that George Bush should be president because he's conducive to Al Qaeda's cause.
Okay, well, thank you, Osama. We know about your recommendation, and I don't know if the president appreciates it, but I certainly have reported on my broadcast that you recommended that George Bush be elected.
I'm killing him.
Okay, thanks very much for your call. I do appreciate it. Hey, Allison, let me ask you this. Look, you say the president didn't push a red button and order the torture to occur, but we do know that there were reports and that Rumsfeld didn't even take the time to read them. Apparently he didn't care. Apparently he didn't inform the State Department. If it can be shown that Dom Rumsfeld wasn't taking these reports seriously.
Well, where did that information come from? Where did those reports come from? There hasn't been an independent investigation into this.
Sure, it came from the Pentagon. It came from General Taguba and General Ryan. They both reported, and Rumsfeld admitted that he hadn't read the reports that since March. I mean, can you agree with me that if he had the reports in his hand and didn't take the time to read them, didn't think that these issues were important, that maybe it's time for Rumsfeld to resign?
I do not think it is time for Rumsfeld to resign. I think that's preposterous. No.
Even if it can be shown that he did not take the reports of torture of Iraqi prisoners seriously, you still don't think he should resign?
I believe that if Donald Rumsfeld knew that there was torture of this magnitude going on in the Iraqi prisons, he would have done something about it. I don't think this is something that he would have carried on.
Okay.
And if we're going to talk about it politically, especially during an election year.
Okay, but if he did know, or if he had reason to know, in other words, if there's a report sitting on his desk and he just decides not to read it for a month, then he's got to go, right, Allison?
I don't think that's the case. I think that's an illegitimate question to address.
Okay, well, let me get to another caller, and then we got to go to a break. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Allison, our young college Republican. What's your first name and where are you from?
Yeah, hi. This is Roy from New Mexico.
Hey, Roy from New Mexico.
And I'm going to be real nice to you just because my niece is named Allison, and she's probably a little younger than you are.
I can't hear you very well.
I have a few questions for you. Number one, I'd like to find out where you get your information besides Fox News and Newsmax.com.
Where do you get your information, Allison?
I'm sorry, I can't even hear what he's saying.
I'm sorry, I'll repeat his question. Roy wants to know where you get your information. Is it Fox News? Where do you get your information?
You know what? There's a lot of places that people can research and get information.
And where do you get information?
There's not one source that I just watch the news.
That's not what I asked.
But what are your favorite sources?
Where you got it from.
Allison, what are your favorite sources of information?
I read a lot of resources every day. I read Salon. I read Real Clear Politics.
You read Salon, really?
I read through a lot of things every day. It's not that I'm some idiot college student who doesn't do his research.
Okay.
I'll buy that. Have you read The Guardian? Do you read The Guardian very often?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Do you read
The Guardian very often?
The UK newspaper, The Guardian.
The Guardian?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It's a British newspaper.
A UK newspaper?
Yeah, it's a British newspaper.
No. I don't.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Do you read the Jerusalem Times?
I do read through World Reports. I read through governmental things. I don't.
World Map Daily and right-wing crap like that. Okay. I have, you stated that all diplomatic channels were exhausted.
She did say that.
That is flatly, absolutely, totally dishonest and totally false.
Do you really believe, Allison, that every diplomatic channel was exhausted?
I do believe that diplomacy was exhausted, yes.
And when the French said just 30 more days, how could diplomatic channels have been exhausted? I mean, they said just give us 30 more days, and we said no. Isn't that a diplomatic channel?
You know, I mean, it's 30 days.
No,
and then, another 30 days. No, we need another 30 days. There was plenty of time. There comes a time when a deadline. Teachers have to hand in papers on a deadline. There are deadlines, and you have to meet them.
Yeah, but you didn't. But you said it was exhausted.
We had this guy bottled up for 10 years.
I'm sorry, I can't hear. What was that?
We had him bottled up for 10 years. He had created nothing of any significance at all after the Gulf War.
Could you hear what he said, Allison? I'll repeat it. No, no problem. Roy's point is that Saddam Hussein was completely bottled up, that in 10 years he hadn't done anything to make a threat to world peace.
That's like saying that Al Capone is on the third floor of an apartment building. He cannot leave that apartment building. But we've given him 30 days to come out of that apartment building. He doesn't come out, so we blow the whole apartment building down, so everybody around him gets wiped out.
Because it depends on what Al Capone is doing in his apartment building.
Roy, you make a good point, and I'm gonna hold Allison to the fire to answer it. Thanks very much for your call, Roy.
Okay,
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Allison, Roy's point is that if you've got a bad guy like Al Capone, as he says, and he's holed up, he's blocked, he can't do any damage. He's still a bad guy, and he may be doing harm in his own room.
Was he really holed up and blocked, though? I mean, we have the Iraqi oil for food program going on. Was he really holed up? No. There was plenty of channels for him to be doing things that were illegal and things that were not right.
Well, things that were not right, you know, I'm sure he was doing things that aren't right. And that's, I guess, gets back to my hard choices point. There are lots of countries on Earth that are doing things that are not right. But how is he harming America?
Oh, we're going to hammer this point, aren't we?
Well, one last time, and then I got to go to break, and I promise I'll move on to domestic policy. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Allison. Make your point.
I believe that he was, I and many other people believe that he was a threat to our security.
And how?
National security. I mean,
how was he going to harm you or me? No, because I know how Al-Qaeda was going to harm you or me. They flew planes into buildings. They killed 3,000 Americans. No one questions their threat. Tell me exactly how you think Saddam Hussein was most harmful.
Countries that harbor those terrorists?
Well, I don't know that Saddam Hussein harbored a single Al-Qaeda terrorist,
well,
but I know that Saudi Arabia did.
If you're planning for your funding and land and you're not actually going after them, if we have terrorists in our country, in the United States, we're rooting them out. How can we support other countries financially through UN programs and things of that nature if they're not...
Okay, but I just want to understand your point, and then we're going to go to a break. As I understand your point, Saddam Hussein was a threat to the United States, to Americans, because you think he may have harbored a terrorist.
I don't believe that Saddam Hussein was necessarily a positive force for our national security.
Oh, I didn't say he was a positive force, but the only threat you've given me is that he gave some funds and he harbored a terrorist. Any others?
I think that there will be a lot of information to come in the future about Saddam Hussein and all his activities, his illegal maneuvers, everything that he was doing at the time that gave the CIA and intelligence reasons to lead us in this direction.
All right, we're going to go to a break. When we're going to go to a break, this is, like I said, sometimes when you talk with Republicans and the Bush administration, it's kind of like a reality show. You never really know their reasons, but they're coming up. They're coming up. I don't know if it'll come up after the break. Maybe one day Bush will tell us who's going to run Iraq after June 30th. I don't know. But we're going to come back and give you a chance to ask Allison more questions and ask me questions. Maybe I'm being unfair to Allison. If I am, bring it on. Take me on. I appreciate good debate. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can also email me by sending an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at RadioInsideScoop.com. When we come back, we're going to talk about the hard choices in domestic policy, tax policy, Social Security. Allison and I are going to be arguing about that, I'm sure, right after these messages.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. Last Friday, five janitors were fired for union organizing at Colorado biotech giant Amgen. Several other members of the Service Employees International Union Justice for Janitors campaign were fired from tech companies for fighting poverty wages, a lack of health care, and harassment in the workplace.
The janitors that clean the high-tech industry in particular are some of the most exploited workers.
Valerie Alcaga, director of the Colorado Justice for Janitors campaign, says janitors in the technology industry are exposed to many types of toxic chemicals and sweatshop working conditions.
We have workers that are on their hands and knees for 10 hours a day cleaning the crevices of these clean rooms, for example, at the Intel plant. We have a worker in particular that, you know, has been working 3 years doing this cleaning on her hand and knees. After years and years of putting all the weight on the wrist begin giving out. The company in this case has told her that what is wrong with her is that she fell in her house, although this is completely not true. But because they're immigrants and because they think they're not going to stand up, this goes on and on and on until the worker gets tired and quits, right?
Union supporters who appear to be immigrants are being targeted for immigration documentation verification in an effort to break the union.
Tens of thousands of British retirees face a bleak future if Parliament cannot come to agreement on a bailout package for their pensions. Most of them worked for companies that went bankrupt during the latest recession. The Labour-led government is devising a pension protection program to deal with situations like these, but as of now, the plan would not be retroactive, leaving some 60,000 recently busted pensioners out in the cold. A multi-partisan amendment is in the works to fix the issue, but has only received lukewarm support from Prime Minister Tony Blair. Retroactive coverage would cost the government an estimated $120 million a year for the next 30 years, but many MPs think it's a small cost to pay if it restores confidence in the British corporate pension system. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Tax cuts of recent years have not actually been tax cuts at all, according to new analysis from United for a Fair Economy. It says something more like tax shifting has actually been taking place and points to the disparity between federal and state tax rates over the last 3 years. The wealthiest 1% of Americans got nearly $200 billion in tax relief over the last 3 years, while coincidentally, state and local governments suffered budget gaps totaling some $200 billion.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. This is your host, Mark Levine, former congressional attorney, bringing you all the news from Washington that the government does not want you to know. And in terms of bringing you the Inside Scoop, I think it's important for listeners to understand how the other side thinks. It's not just a question of the facts. We go over lots of facts here on the Inside Scoop. In fact, I'm proud to say that my broadcast brings you the facts that you need to talk to your friends and coworkers and family about politics, give you the facts you need. But I think it's important not just to understand facts, but to understand psychology, to understand how red America thinks. And so all this week, and you can check it out on my website at radioinsidescoop.com, we are exploring how red America thinks. I'm firmly in blue America, firmly in the Al Gore Democratic territory, but my guest is Allison Eichele. She's with the College National Republican Committee. She's from, I think, Provo, Utah, right, Allison?
Actually, I'm from Idaho. I just graduated from in Logan, Utah, actually.
Okay,
cool.
Fair enough. She's from Idaho, certainly a red state, and she just graduated from Logan, Utah, very much a red center of a red state. So we're trying to understand why Allison thinks the way she does. And listen, if you're a conservative, if you agree with Allison, if you want to challenge me on my thought, again, all I can say is bring it on. We always welcome your calls, no matter what your political views are. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. It's toll-free. Or you can email me by sending an email to Mark, M-A-R-K, at radioinsidescoop.com. And I want to read to you an email that I got, Allison, from John. Doesn't say where he's from, but it kind of brings us into domestic policy, because I don't want to spend the entire time talking about foreign policy. But John asked me to ask you, in light of where we are economically on the war, on Medicare, on diverting $700 million without congressional approval, that's of course the diversion from Afghanistan to Iraq, John wants to know if there's anything that you believe this administration has done that is wrong.
I got asked that question last time. You know, I'm going to be honest on this. I think that everybody along in a course of, I mean, you go to work every day. There may be something that maybe you wish you would have done differently, but you learn from those mistakes. I honestly couldn't pinpoint one thing that I could say. You know, I wish that the Bush administration would have done this differently.
Not a single thing, domestic, foreign.
I wouldn't say that it's something that I could completely rule out and say they've done everything exactly perfect, everything exactly right.
Well, tell me something you'd wish they'd done better.
You know, gall.
Can't think of one, huh? That's okay. Bush couldn't think of any mistakes he'd made either. So, you know, I guess you're consistent on that point.
Then, right?
Well, if you think of one in the commercial break, you'll let us know. I want to go to one of our callers now. It's been waiting for a while. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Allison Eichele. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Hi, this is Susan from Santa Cruz.
Hi, Susan from Santa Cruz. You got a question for me or my guest?
Well, Allison, I'm listening to what you're saying, and I'm asking a question. Are you aware of how many times you have used the word believe, I believe, in your answers?
Yeah, I believe, yeah.
You continually say, I believe. And
do
then
you have something
asking,
with the word believe?
No. The problem is, when you're looking at politics and you're looking at the world and you're forming a world view, you need to know what's going on. You need to know and understand what the actual facts and happenings are. You just did exactly the same thing as President Bush did. When he was asked if he made a mistake, it was almost word for word what you said. Yeah, in the course of life we make mistakes and they're there to learn from. Well, then how about some learning? Take a look around you. Take a look at what is actually happening. You made a very flip statement before when Mark was talking about easy and hard choices. You used abortion as an easy choice. I have known many, many women who have had abortions. It has never been an easy choice. It is a very difficult choice. Most people who do it are between a rock and a hard place.
Well, I agree. I would never say that abortion, no matter what your political beliefs are, would be an easy choice.
Well, you did say that.
I do think that abortion is an easier way out than making the choice to be responsible for your actions.
Well, it may be the most responsible thing for a person to do. And there are times when there are choices that are like that. And so what I'm just asking you to do is to take a look at your idea of belief. The thing that you do is to say, well, I believe maybe your dad was a Republican. Probably was, right?
I don't think that's important. I have a
mind
of my own.
You don't? Well, I'm just asking because my experience is that I've seen Republicanism passed down through generations. And I know you're an intelligent person. I can hear that. And I'm asking you to think and to really take a look at what's going on. We never had a reason to go into Iraq. Never had a reason to go into Iraq. It was never a threat to us. And all you have to do is look at the facts to see that. And look at how you're basing your opinions on emotional states, on states of belief. So I say, put your belief in God. Don't put it in the president or other people. Take a look around. Put it in yourself.
Susan, I want to thank you for your call.
Mark.
Really, I think you had a lot of very, very important, beautiful things to say. Thanks very much.
Mark.
Allison, how would you respond to that?
I found her comment about putting belief in God very interesting, especially when she mentioned abortion in the same sentence as belief in God. I just found that incredibly hypocritical.
Yeah, but what she's saying is that maybe, You should not just look at belief, not just look at emotion, but actually look at some of the facts. Why is it hypocritical for someone to believe in God?
I believe that much of my evidence or much of my reasons for supporting the war in Iraq were based on emotion at all. I didn't have somebody that was killed in Iraq in the war. I don't have any of the emotional attachments to wanting to go to war with Iraq.
I just
politically believe that that was the right choice to make.
Well, let me give you an example. I have a email here from Vince. Don't know where Vince is from. But Vince writes, Mark, do these people all fall out of the same mold? They all say the same thing but never answer questions directly. God forbid you would ever need to go before these people in the court of law. Forget innocent until proven guilty. We'll find it later. You must be kidding. You take things on a hunch? It's kind of a harsh comment. What do you think, Allison?
Well, I think that's very interesting as well, because whenever I listen to liberals speak, I'm thinking the same thoughts. Is this person completely diverting the question? They're not even answering the question.
I think their point is that you said, when I asked...
The way that people look at each other is that if you don't agree with their statement, you're saying, I don't understand it. And obviously that's the case.
No, but, when I said what the danger was, the threat that Saddam Hussein was to America, you said, well, we're going to find out more later. He gave some money. You think he harbored some terrorists. But in terms of further threats, you think we're just going to find out.
What I meant by that statement is Iraq is a big country. I don't think that necessarily we've gone through the entire country. We found Saddam Hussein in, a 5-foot hole? I don't think we've gone through the entire country and we can say there are no weapons of mass destruction in that country.
Right.
Saddam was no threat to us, and that's what I meant by that statement.
Okay, so basically invade first, find the evidence later.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I think we had ample evidence to begin with on the war. What I'm saying is, as far as addressing weapons of mass destruction, I don't believe we've had time to comb the entire country and prove that.
Yeah, maybe if we invaded Albania, we could find weapons of mass destruction there. I don't know. But let me ask you about domestic policy, because I do want to not only talk about the war in Iraq. One of the things I found is that there's not a tax cut that Republicans don't support. Every tax cut is good. I guess there are some. They don't really like tax cuts of things like Social Security taxes and things that focus on the poor. But they really like tax cuts for income you don't earn. If a rich relative dies and leaves you hundreds of millions of dollars, they don't want to tax that. If you have money in stocks and bonds, they don't want to tax that. Tell me this, because I guess because I believe in hard choices. I think that if you don't pay any taxes, then people, frankly, of your generation, mine too, but even more yours, are going to have to pay twice the taxes because they're going to have to pay the debt back. So I guess I want to ask you, in this time of hard choices, and I can tell you hard choices I would make. I would tax, like John Kerry, those that make $200,000 more. I would bring back the estate tax. I'd bring back dividend taxes. I would cut some of the corporate welfare. Those are some of the hard choices.
How about we just regulate government a little bit better?
Okay, well, that's what I want to ask you.
Those are
some of the hard choices I would make to balance the budget. My question for you is, what hard choices would you make to balance the budget?
I would do the opposite. I would cut the taxes so people have their own money to spend.
Okay, but that makes the budget situation worse.
Feel is necessary.
Okay, but when you have less money coming to the government, we have higher deficits, and people like you, you know, children, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, even kids that can't vote yet, even kids that have been unborn yet, they're the ones that are going to have to pay this money back. So
why do we have a deficit? I think the government
why do we have a deficit?
We need to look at some of our programs, and we need to reanalyze.
Fair.
What
would you cut?
With our government money.
Great point. All right. There are two ways to end the budget deficit: raise taxes or cut spending. Absolutely. You say cut spending. What would you cut?
Well, okay. I don't want to pick out an example.
Pick out 10 examples.
No, I'll pick out an example, but I don't want to pick out a personal example. I would say that there are a lot of programs that the government passes. I mean, the government
give me one.
Passes many, many, many programs throughout the fiscal year. And
okay.
I think that the way
which
that
programs?
Government overspends, I mean, you know this as well as I do, Mark. Don't act like you don't know.
No, I agree. I can tell you
the government
overspends.
If you don't spend your budget that you get every year,
awesome.
And you don't get it back the next year.
I agree
so
with you.
They spend every penny they have in frivolous ways.
Right, and I agree. There's a lot of government overspending. For example, the corporate welfare we give to Halliburton, I think, is overspending. Do you agree? No? I mean,
yes.
Tell you what, we're going to go to a break, and I also got a caller that's hanging on. I want that caller to stay on, please, until after the break. I'm going to give you the break, Allison. I want you to think about what you would do to balance the budget, or do you really think the future generations should pay this back? Think about spending programs you would cut. I want to hear about all this frivolous waste. I'll give you the whole break to think about it. And meanwhile, if you want to call in and talk to Allison or talk to me, feel free. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. Toll free, 877-57-SCOOP, as we continue to debate hard choices. I say that liberals consider hard choices and conservatives think it's all easy. When we get back from the break, I want to hear all the programs that Allison wants to cut. I'm putting her on the ropes here, but I think she's with the College National Republican Committee. She should certainly be able to give me some programs she wants to cut. So we're going to go to commercial break. The number is 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this message.
In March, blared the headlines, and what a rose-colored rush of self-congratulation ensued. George W. gloated like the boy who stuck in his thumb and pulled out a plum. Economists were high-fiving each other. Editorialists hailed the new boom, and you'd have thought the bluebird of happiness was singing in every backyard. But even as Bush strutted atop a made-for-TV platform that his staff had emblazoned with the slogan, "Strengthening America's Economy," the whole scene had a false feel to it, eerily similar to George's strut in his Top Gun costume last year aboard that aircraft carrier that his staff had emblazoned with the declaration, "Mission Accomplished" in Iraq. Just as our troops are still mired in that bloody war, so are most Americans still mired in a low-wage economy that can't be fixed by presidential strut. For the powers that be to celebrate the addition of 300,000 jobs is ludicrous in an economy that has lost more than 2 million jobs since Bush took office and that continues to offshore our best-paying jobs. If you peek beneath the headlines, you'll find that the number of out-of-work Americans actually went up by 200,000 in March, and the number of underemployed, those wanting full-time work but only getting part-time jobs, was up by 300,000. Also, of the ballyhooed new jobs that Bush claims to have created in March, nearly 50,000 are not new at all. They're the jobs of California supermarket workers who had been on strike and have now returned to their old jobs. Worse, what Bush and the powers that be don't want us noticing is that nearly all of March's job creation was in low-wage, no-benefit work that cannot sustain a middle-class way of life. Indeed, despite the gloating over March's job stats, average weekly earnings went down in March. This is Jim Hightower saying, the real issue is not job numbers, but the decline in good jobs, the very lifeblood of America's middle class.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
While you can't see brilliant colors on the radio, you can use them in your business. That's why the Xerox WorkCenter M24 digital color copier printer is attractive to anyone who listens to the voice of reason. The lease price is a low $189 a month. You get brilliant Xerox color for less than 9 cents a page, plus the Xerox Total Satisfaction Guarantee. To get all the colors you can't see on the radio, do the most reasonable thing.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're exploring conservative philosophy this week. We're trying to figure out why Red America thinks the way it does. And I've written a poem about it. Check it out on my website, RadioInsideScoop.com, where I argue, at least in part in the poem, that liberals at least face the fact that we have hard choices to make as a matter of national policy. But I don't think that conservatives recognize the hard choices that we have. And my guest, Allison Eichles from the College National Republican Committee, and she's been gamely defending her party. I think she's taken a bunch of hits from myself and my callers, but I got to congratulate her for sticking to it and sticking to her view. And let me just tell you, if you're listening on radiopower.org, that this is sponsored entirely by your donations. And go ahead, if you like my program, make a donation. It helps the site. It helps keep my programs on the air. Before we went to break, I asked Allison a tough question. And if you want to ask her a tough question, by the way, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. There's still some time to call in. 877-57-SCOOP. But the question I asked Allison was, okay, we got the biggest budget deficit in American history. What would you do to alleviate that budget deficit? She said she wouldn't increase taxes. Okay, fine. She wants to cut spending. She's had the whole break. Allison, what spending programs would you cut?
I thought about this over the break, and I don't think that necessarily the way to answer your question is to pick out five different programs out of the millions that are running right now and look exactly at how each one is administered and cut the program. Spending among government programs need to be reformed, wherein that, for example, with Social Security, why do we have to spend, if we have two people paying in for one person that's taking out right now, why do we have to spend all that money? Why can't we reform Social Security in a way that, at the end of a fiscal year, we're not just trying to get rid of that excess money where, as you're saying, we're going to have a problem with our future generations?
Well,
why can't we reform our programs in that manner?
Well, because Social Security requires, like any government program, it requires either you've got to cut benefits to current people who are receiving benefits, or you've got to raise taxes on people putting it in, or you have to do the Clinton solution, which was to devote part of the surplus, which we don't have anymore, to protect Social Security. But you need more money. You can't magically wave your wand and solve the Social Security money problem without more money. Don't you agree, Allison?
I don't think that's not what I was saying.
Okay.
I'm saying we have a lot of money that is getting wasted in all sectors of government.
Give me an example.
Now, what I'm saying is, how many times?
Pentagon with $1,000 toilet
seats.
Government
waste money. If you don't get your money, if you're working in a government administered program and you don't spend all your money by the end of the year on whatever, it gets taken away the next year. Am I not right on that?
No, that sometimes is the case. Sometimes people look at budgets in a bad way. They look at it based entirely on last year's spending. And I'm going to agree with you that that's a bad thing to do. But I don't think that that's near close to the reason why we have these record deficits. I do want to get to a caller, though, before the program ends. Caller, you've been waiting a long time. Thanks for your patience. What's your first name and where are you from?
This is Brian from New Jersey.
Hey, Brian from New Jersey. What's your question or comment?
I'm sorry to bring back up Iraq again.
Go ahead.
It just really upsets me when people are still brainwashed by the administration that there are weapons and we're going to find them. Hans Blix, when he was still in the country, the UN weapons inspector, and Bush said, there are weapons, we know where they are. He said, where? Hans Blix said, where are they? We'll go find them. Bush said, no, you better come out now. We're going to invade. they got out, we invaded, and if we knew where they were, we would have found them by now.
I'll tell you, Brian, I'll tell you what we found. There are pieces of paper that suggest that Saddam Hussein may, if he gets a chance and he gets the right weapons, be able to create them. You know, in our encyclopedias even, that might suggest how to create weapons. There were two tractor trailers that were capable of carrying vials. So that's proof, right, Brian?
Well, and then when the administration comes out last month and says they would be amazed, that is a quote from a senior administration official. I can't tell you which one because, as Bush said, well, there are many senior administration officials, but they would be amazed if they found weapons of mass destruction. So
yeah, I think
really
it was David Kay.
I can't hear him, but I think I probably pick up what he's saying after your remark.
Yeah, he's talking about weapons of mass destruction. He's saying that, you know, the administration, Hans Blix said, where are they? Don Rumsfeld said, we know exactly where they are. And Hans Blix said, okay, where are they?
When did he say that? Point that out to me.
You know what? I have seen the quote. It's a fair question. I'll put it on my website. No, he did say that. I don't have the quote in front of me, but it's a fair point. I make it a point that I can back up every single thing I say on the air. So, Allison, it's a great point. I'm going to find the quote. I'm going to add it to my website. And I will put it right there. And, in fact, this gives me a great chance to tell you how my website has changed. For all you listeners out there, RadioInsideScoop.com is now a blog as well as a website. You can comment on this show or any show I do in the past or future. You just click on my website, RadioInsideScoop.com, click on Broadcast Archive Blog, and you can hear old shows and make your comments about whatever you want. I'm going to add the comment. I'm going to find that quote by Dums Rumsfeld because, Allison, you're absolutely right. I should be able to back up everything I say. I'm going to find that quote, and I'm going to put it on the website. I promise you.
Please leave it in context as well.
I will put it in as much context as I can find it. That's a fair question, too. I will. Hey, Brian, thanks very much for your call. We got to wrap up here.
Thank you, Mark.
But I appreciate it. Allison, you've taken a few hits. I always appreciate, though, you're coming on my show very much. It takes a strong character and personality to be able to defend your views in the face of a lot of people who disagree with you.
Thank you for having me.
I'm certainly one of them, but thank you very much for coming on my show, and I would hope that one day that Republican conservative talk show hosts would be willing to have me as a guest on their show so I could take the hits of conservatives because
they would love to have your outrageous and out-of-line comments on any show, I'm sure, Mark.
Well, you know, I'd love it because I think that they don't like dissent clearly as much as I do. But thanks very much, Allison. Thanks for coming on the show. I do appreciate
thank
it.
You. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Okay, look, as I said, the website has changed. Check it out, RadioInsideScoop.com. I'm getting all kinds of emails from all over the world, I should say, which is really cool. It shows the power of the Internet. And I'm getting called. In fact, I got a comment from Taiwan. I got one from Paris. So it's nice to know that people are listening around the world, even if in the United States they really have only right-wing radio. I just got an email from Marion. I don't know if I dare. Well, okay, I'll say it. I'm just reading an email from Marion. Marion writes, Allison Eichley must be mine. Tell her to fly to Eugene and marry me and have our 11 perfect children. She will not only be my helpmate, follow me to church, but my spokeswoman. To listen to Allison's dulcet tones arguing in favor of our defense secretary is to overhear a bit of what the conversation of angels in heaven must be like. Whew. Okay. thank you, Marion, very much for your commentary. I do want to say that if you have a question, if you have an issue that you want discussed on the Inside Scoop, let me know. All you have to do is go to my website, again, RadioInsideScoop.com. Send me an email. Let me know that there's a topic that you want to discuss. Tomorrow, we're going to continue our investigation into how Red America thinks, why conservatives think the way they do. And I think I've got a very tough debating person. His name is Jeff Meredith. I've debated him before in public. In front of audiences of a couple hundred people, actually, here in Washington. And we're going to talk about my poem, the poem you can find on RadioInsideScoop.com, which I would think he probably will find offensive. But I argue in the poem, read it for yourself, but that basically that conservatives love America like mommy and daddy. This is an idea first put forward, I think, by Al Franken. I got to give him credit for it. But I go in and explore that the conservatives love America right or wrong. For them, America is always right. For them, there are no hard choices. For them, life is very easy, very simple. And it's easier to think if you're a conservative. You don't have to make hard choices. But that liberals, that we progressives, we love America like a spouse, like our husband or wife. And you know, there's certainly true love between people, you know, husbands and wives, and no question about it. But we understand that our country isn't perfect, just like you understand that your spouse isn't perfect. And though you never want to have a divorce, there's always that possibility there. And because of that, I think we understand that we want our country to do better. We want our spouse to do better. We want us all to love each other. And at the same time, we're not blind. We don't believe in blind faith. We understand there are hard choices. We understand that America isn't always right. And I think that part of being a liberal is to have your eyes open. But Jeff Meredith, I suspect, will disagree with me. Tune in tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 Central, 1 Mountain, and noon Pacific, and you can hear that debate. And then Sunday, I'm debating another conservative. It's my last of my weeks of conservative debates, finding out how Red America thinks, to talk about censorship. Whether it's Nightline or Disney censoring Michael Moore's movie, why is it that conservatives support censorship? So tune in tomorrow and Sunday, and thank you very much for listening. This is Mark Levine, signing off.